BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. Now, I'm on the line to Cape Town today to chat to Sam Paddock, co-founder and CEO of Get Smarter, the Cape Town-based online education specialist that was acquired recently for $103 million, or about 1.3 billion rand, by a NASDAQ-listed company called 2U. I think it's a deal that caught many people by surprise. Sam, thank you for taking the time to chat to Tech Central today.
What a pleasure, Duncan. Great to be here.
So before we get to that deal, please tell me a bit more about Get Smarter. You founded it back, I think, in 2008 with your brother, Rob?
Exactly right. In fact, the journey starts about 2 years prior to that. My brother and I had decided to join my parents in my dad's property-focused law firm. He's a specialist property lawyer, and what had caught his attention back in 2005 was the opportunity to educate or to take some of the training he was already doing with the University of Cape Town online. Now, a year prior to that, in 2004, I had graduated from UCT with a business science information systems, and in that final year, we were required to do a six-month project, a systems development project, to build out a full computer system. And we had chosen at the time, for a range of reasons, to build out what we called the virtual campus. And, you know, here we were, five or six university students in 2004, trying to reimagine what it would be like to study if it was just online. And so we did this. We built out this virtual campus, and that then fortuitously segued into an opportunity that my father had with the University of Cape Town to take some of the courses he had online. It's a funny story, but he just doesn't like flying that much. And so the idea of going around the country to train people, Johannesburg, Durban, Cape Town, was unappealing. And so it was really a combination of family members' ideas, my dad, myself, my brother, my mom, that led to the kind of the very first online course out of Paddox, which was the family business. And then in 2008, we were thinking about how to grow the business. And there's a long story behind that, but we don't have a lot of time. So what I can tell you is that in a short period of time is that it was really a collision of ideas again, and an idea of the bold idea of wanting to grow the business to be far bigger than it was at the time that led to the launch of Get Smarter. As a hook into that, our very first course was a certificate course in wine evaluation from Stellenbosch University, which was hugely interesting at the time, but that's really what launched Get Smarter in April of 2008.
Okay. And how did you fund it in those early days? Was it self-funded, family-funded, or did you go to the market quite early on for funding?
Totally self-funded, so bootstrapped the whole way through. And that was really, we were fortunate enough to tap into an existing family business, which was small, but had enough to pay our salaries. You know, I think so many entrepreneurs these days tend to think of their starts in terms of, and especially their early wins in terms of raising VC money. I think sometimes that can be so true, but I think it's a bit of a red herring. All we needed was enough money to pay our very, very basic salaries at the time. Mm. And that's what we did. And it turned out to be a really, really good idea, because within his control with the VCs and serving a complicated set of stakeholders.
Right, right. Okay. So you started in Cape Town with UCT. You've got some pretty amazing names of universities amongst your clients or partners. Amongst them, world-famous universities such as Cambridge and Harvard. I saw MIT listed there as well.
Indeed.
How did you started here. You were a small South African tech education startup based in Cape Town. I'd imagine, you know, you would have started talking to the local universities, but how did these relationships with these world-renowned institutions come about?
You know, Duncan, that's a great question. How did they come about? Well, through a lot of hard work, through a lot of trying. We had our history of Get Smart is very much focused on in South Africa, and we had a very successful and still continue to have a very successful partnership with the University of Cape Town, and more recently the University of Stellenbosch and BITS. It was about almost 2 years ago now that we decided we have a very specific strategy that we write down on one page. It's actually called the One Page Strategic Plan. And on it, we set our 15-year big, hairy, audacious goal, which is to improve 1 million lives through better education, which is a big deal and very bold and something which we're a little bit scared of because we weren't sure if we were able to achieve it. And 2 years ago, we decided we weren't going to be able to get to that goal by 2030 if we didn't internationalize, if we didn't approach a broader market. And so that's exactly what we did. We set ourselves a 9-month goal to sign 3 of the world's legendary universities. And we went out and we did that. It came across the executive team as almost impossible at the time. But we put our heads down and we went and did that. We first signed a contract with the University of Chicago. Off the back of that, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology put their trust in us, put their faith in us to launch 2 short courses with them. And then we also worked with the University of London. So it was a real team effort. It was terrifying when we first set the goal, but it was seminal in terms of our path to date.
How big was the team back then? I mean, was it you personally flying to the US and the UK to meet with these universities? How big was the team?
Well, it was my brother and myself, Rob Paddock, and I. We ended up flying around, meeting up with the really anyone who would meet with us.
Right.
But the team back then, we've doubled in size in the past sort of 18, 20 months. We're currently at 306 full-time employees and 100 tutors. And we expect to be at 400 full-time employees by the end of the year. So our talent team is very busy, and that has its own challenges as it relates to scaling one's organization through people. I think a point it may be of interest, but you know, we're very much an ed tech company, an education company first, enabled by tech, and not the other way around. And so we do scale through people. We see the best learning happening where relationships lie at the center of that learning, with our student success coaches, with our tutors in the small group environments, with students' peers, and we're a very people-focused education technology company, as opposed to many of our competitors who differentiate based on kind of the superior software platforms and the like. We just take a very different view to what constitutes better education. But back to your point, back to your question, we have grown rapidly in the last little while, and seminal to that was both my brother and I flying to Boston, to Cambridge, to have these meetings. Rob Paddock, my brother, now heads up our university partner engagement, and so I don't do that flying anymore. He's much better than me at it, and he does an exceptional job, and is building out a global team of relationship managers to really fully express our potential now.
Okay, and are you going to stick to the tertiary education market, or do you think there's an even bigger opportunity here, perhaps in secondary education?
It's a great question. So even within tertiary, there's different categories, different kind of segments. We are very much in the continuing education market. So our average age of our customers is 35, 38. It ranges between 35 and 38. But really, the category of customer we have is the career focused or mid-career working professional focused on advancing their careers. So at the moment, that is very much our customer. We of course, you know, we deal with students from 18 to 81. That's mm-hmm. true. Mm. But that's really the sweet spot. People who are who have been in the workplace for 5 or 10 years, who are looking to advance their careers, who've made some advancement, who are looking to retool, to reskill, and to build confidence for the next kind of phase of their career. That's really the student that we deal with. So within the tertiary space, we're helping universities expand into the continuing education space globally. So we're currently serving students from 150 countries around the world. And what that means is one of the propositions we represent to our university partners is the ability to take their incredibly valuable intellectual property and the way of their style of teaching and make that available to tens of thousands of students from around the world in a way that wouldn't have been possible previously.
Okay. So, I mean, just explain the type of coursework that you develop for these universities. Is this meant as a almost a supplement to what they already do in classroom teaching, or is this meant as a completely standalone product that people who, for example, don't have no way of being at that university in those classrooms can access this material? Is it meant an addition to that, or is it a completely separate product that you're offering with these universities?
You know, it's different per university partner, okay. But in general, we're helping them create new products for new markets. So it's not that the universities don't engage with working professionals from around the world. Many of them do. What we're representing to them, maybe I can take a step back here. Duncan, have you heard of MOOCs, massively open online courses?
I have, yes. But for okay. the benefit so of our MOOCs, listeners, maybe just explain what they are again.
Super. So MOOCs, the word MOOC stands for Massive Open Online Course. And they gained a lot of popularity. This movement of MOOCs gained a lot of popularity 2011, 2012. In fact, I think it was, which magazine was it now? I think it was I forget exactly which one it was, but one of the very prominent international magazines named 2012 the year of the MOOC, because what they thought that these courses would achieve was to democratize education, was to open it up and fundamentally disrupt higher education. Now, massive because these courses were available, open enrollments and sometimes enrolled up to 150,000 people at a time. Open because it was open enrollments. Mm-hmm. Online because it was digital and available anywhere anyone had an interconnection. And course because it had some sort of structure to it and followed some sort of university curriculum. So that was that's the basis of what a MOOC is. If we fast forward to 2017, the big MOOC providers and MOOCs generally have not lived up to their expectations of disrupting education. But what they have done is they have legitimized online education as a meaningful way of educating and being educated. And probably more importantly, it's given universities the opportunity to experiment with online tools and in a way which they weren't doing beforehand. And in a similar vein, that is what we represent to our university partners, is an opportunity to experiment in a very high quality model with people at the center, with the ability to generate meaningful revenue and build their brands in a meaningful way with a new market being working professionals globally. And that's really the basis upon which we work with our university partners. I'm not sure if you want to head off in any direction from there, but that is one way of looking at what we do for our university partners.
Okay, and I'd imagine that the people who study through these sort of online courses are very short of time. I mean, these are busy professionals who, as you say, are extending their education. They probably have a full time job to hold down as well, so probably can't afford to.
Absolutely right.
Go off and take a year off and go and study at university.
You know, it's absolutely right. I think, and the company that's just recently acquired us, 2U, one of their, they are the world's leaders in online degree programs. And what's interesting about that is that oftentimes, as a working professional, you maybe mid-career, you're looking to meaningful meaningfully upskill yourself. And to uproot, to move cities, to universities so that you can achieve that over a kind of an 18 or 24 month period is meaningfully disruptive, and it's very expensive. And so their proposition, one of their propositions to their students is that you don't have to uproot your life, that you can maintain your job, and that you can actually still achieve a degree, complete a degree program with one of the great universities that they offer. And with short courses, we go even further, because while we lack the credibility or the gravitas of a fully fledged degree program, what we do is we offer short, sharp, very industry relevant short courses,
right,
that fit into a working professional's life in somewhere between 2 and 3 months in length, somewhere between 10 and 15 hours a week, which is not, I mean, you know, working professionals, they generally have kids, they have full-time jobs, they're working very hard at extracurricular activities and the like. Finding 15 hours in a week is quite challenging, actually. If one thinks people break it down to a daily basis, to find 2 hours a day is not all that easy. And yet our students find a way to do that. And that's why our product fits so well. It's flexible, with some constraints, because we do want our students to engage together in small groups, tutor-led small groups. And they're able to do it in a highly engaging, flexible way online, which means, again, they don't have to uproot their lives. They can pick up these very short, sharp skill sets that are then certified by very well-known universities. So it's, you know, absolutely the proposition to working professionals is very meaningful, and it's based on our growth rates, a very meaningful a hugely growing market.
Right. Are there certain course materials that make more sense to be delivered in this way? I mean, are there certain types of education that are best delivered in a classroom, or can you make available just about anything, any course material available in through this medium?
You know, Duncan, that's a really great question, and I think that's being determined to some extent with the advent of virtual reality, or let's call it the commercialization of virtual reality, bringing that to as a mass market product. Some of your more practical skills. Let's think of nursing, for example. I mean, you probably don't want to be using the midwife or the doctor who delivered the virtual baby. There are some skill sets which lend themselves to very practical application. And I think we're somewhere away from being able to meaningfully educate people in a digital environment, when actually the application is very physical.
Right.
Management translates very well. Anything which involves collaboration. I mean, a lot of the time, oftentimes the work we do with our students inherent in the learning outcomes is working together with a small group digitally. I mean, that is in itself is a meaningful skill set in the time we live. So I would argue that most subjects translate well, but there are a handful, and will remain to be a handful of subjects where one needs some physical, some contact-based intervention to truly round out the skill set. So I think it would be foolish to say that it translates perfectly for every type of every learning outcome one would like to achieve. But I think we're getting there.
Okay. And your relationship with the universities, that's on a revenue share basis. You share revenue with the universities on the sale of these products,
Correct.
Of these courses. Okay. How is the buy-in quite easy? Do they buy into this without too much convincing?
Well, again, different per university partner. I think that it is, if I put myself in the shoes of a university partner, I think they are rightfully very thoughtful and protective of their brand, what they stand for.
Mm.
And so I think oftentimes the question is, do I trust this partner to work with me,
right,
who will not only degrade my brand, but actually help me build my brand? Are these people that I can trust and work with? And I think those are some key questions. So I'd argue that it's very challenging, as is the case of any meaningful partnership, to get it going. And once it gets going, one needs to continuously build that relationship, prove one's worth and trust on an ongoing basis. So I think it is difficult, and yet so important. We can't do what we do without our university partners. So, but yes, the short answer to your question is yes. I think it can be challenging, but only because I truly understand the way they feel about their brands and what they offer to their students.
Right. Okay. So, tell me a bit about the 2U deal. How did that come about? I believe you had a chance meeting with their CEO sometime last year.
That's right. It was October last year, and there we were, head down, focused on building our business into an international market. And the CEO of 2U, Chip Pausek, stumbled upon one of our adverts for a course we were running with MIT titled MIT FinTech. There's a lot of perceived disruption and some anxiety in the market around what blockchain is going to do to financial services and many other peripheral applications as well. And we had partnered with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's Media Lab to help the financial services industry make sense of this. And it's a phenomenal program. And Chip had come across this ad. I think it was on Facebook. Clicked through and sort of, as he describes it to me, he says like, "Whoa, who are these guys? Like, where did they come from? Why do I not know about them?" And so we had a call. We weren't for sale. And I told him that right up front. And yet we continued discussing. And what kind of became clear to both of us is that the potential of tying up was kind of too good to ignore. We have, on the one hand, we have the world's leading degree programs. On the other hand, we have this nimble South African operator who is kind of arguably considered one of the main players in this alternative credentialing space of short course. The idea of a publicly funded public markets company and a nimble South African company, there were a lot of opposites, actually, if I think about it. If you think about the highly certified, highly selected degree programs, the open enrollment, short course, low certification, but still meaningful, the public company versus the private and the private company, that their management teams 15 years are senior and very experienced. Here we have executives being 30 and 35. It's probably ancient in many people's worlds, but us, for us, we understand the value of experience, and there were many of these kind of these what seemingly opposite, but together could be very meaningfully stronger than before, and I think that was kind of the basis upon which we started talking very seriously, and then picked up a lot of momentum in this side of the new year, and that culminated in the signature of a deal in May, and then we actually just closed 2 weeks ago.
Oh, you've closed already. Okay.
So exactly. Okay. Right. So we are in the words we use, we feel that we are better together, and it's a fascinating feeling because the closing date came and went, and we're just marching on. I love how they're giving us the autonomy to operate in accordance with our existing plan. They don't want to change much right now. They believe in what we're doing and how we're doing it and who we're doing it with. And yet they're also offering immense support in data and analytics and in whichever way they can help strengthen us. So it's a very interesting. I've heard a lot about acquisitions going wrong and the challenge of them. I'm thrilled.
Great stuff. So $103 million valuation attached to the deal. Have you disclosed the multiple they paid?
We haven't, and I think that's not something that I'm able to discuss on this call.
Okay.
But yes, it's these sort of elements will be given as part of guidance to the market in due course.
Okay. Okay. How independent do you remain of 2U? Do you continue to run Get Smarter as a completely independent organization? Is there any integration that's going to happen now?
So we're a wholly owned subsidiary of TU. They want us to continue with the existing management team on the existing plan for 17 and 18 and beyond. And so it really, I mean, at the core of it is going to come down to the quality of the relationship between myself and my Chapastic, the CEO that I report into, and the broader executive team. But there's, you know, there's some meaningful opportunities for learning gain, and I think that's why we have several dotted lines between the two companies that are busy developing and emerging, and that just makes a lot of sense to me. We can learn a lot from our counterparts to you, and so there'll be a strong reporting line between myself and Chip, and then many reported dotted reporting lines between my executives and his.
Okay. So So Sam, you and Rob are in here for the long term. Are you? We often see examples of acquisitions happening and then the founders depart a year later. Are you in this business for the long haul?
We are, and I think it's interesting for me. I mean, to get very personal for a second, I think one of the questions we had was, you know, how would we feel post close? And it's interesting. We've spoken about it as an executive team. We don't feel different, which is interesting for us. And we've always been, you know, it's not right to say that it's not about the money, because of course one of many people's objectives is to build wealth. But what I'm most interested in is that our purpose remains very strong. We feel very purposeful doing what we're doing. We have a huge runway ahead of us for personal growth, which I believe kind of comes in terms of requirements or in terms of my personal requirements trumps many other aspects of one's work, including wealth. And so that's been really interesting for me to feel that and to genuinely be able to talk about it. Doesn't feel different. We're still on the same journey, and yet it is different because we have a parent company and they enable us in a really interesting way. So I'm so far so good, and yes, we're in. I mean, you know, which feels great.
Good stuff. Part of a NASDAQ-listed company now.
Absolutely.
Sam, I know we're almost out of time. Just lastly, you've cracked the big deal here that I think most tech startups in South Africa can only dream of. What's your advice to the local tech startups, the guys that are just getting started out, that perhaps look at you in awe and perhaps want to try and emulate what the successes that you've had to date? What advice would you give to them? How much of it is luck?
I think a fair amount. I mean, so the first thing that I want to say is that I think in South Africa, we suffer from feeling like we're not as good international as international market. And I think that's rubbish. So the first thing is that we've managed to build a company to pre that acquisition, actually play on a global stage, compete with global players, very, very heavily resourced global players who took well over $100 million in funding and who didn't manage to succeed the way we did, and we didn't take any funding. So I think that the pure human capital in South Africa, in Cape Town specifically, but I think, I mean, Johannesburg, throughout, we have exceptional human capital. That's the first thing. And so we shouldn't undersell our potential. It's not everyone's dream to be acquired. You know, if this meeting hadn't happened, we wouldn't have been acquired, and we would still be building a great global business. So South Africans can build global businesses, and we shouldn't sell ourselves short. I think we need to stop. We need to start believing more in ourselves. That's the first piece. I think. Other pieces of advice touch on the entrepreneurial mindset, and I feel like we have in South Africa we have some really meaningful advantages over the developed world. One of them is our cost of labor, and especially when competing in a services industry or one with a lot of human involvement, I feel like that's a huge advantage. We certainly found that, and so. Not only do South Africans have raw potential, but on top of that, we have some really unique homegrown advantages that I think we should be that should be playing a role in the way we think strategically about our businesses. And then thirdly, there is a healthy degree of luck. And you know, we've been operating for 10 years. We feel like we've done a great job, and luck plays a role. So on the one hand, we need to believe in ourselves more. And I really believe that we have the full basis to do that. The second is that it's not all, we can't over attribute the success solely to ourselves. It's an ecosystem we find ourselves in. There's an industry we find ourselves in, and we're very conscious of that as it relates to our own egos and our own sense of self. You hit the nail on the head. There's a healthy degree of luck in these things. And yet, I also believe that the harder you try, the luckier you get.
I was just about to say there's a phrase. Someone said it, the harder you work, the luckier you get. But Sam, I know we're out of time. Sam Paddock is CEO of Get Smarter. Sam, thank you again for chatting to Tech Central today, and all the best for the future.
Thanks, Duncan. Great to be here.